fight for this title. And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Warm Down. And we're doing them over Skype now. You know why. Today, delighted to be joined by one of the first ones that we had on The Warm Down a few years ago, I think it was. I think you've done... This might be your hat trick, actually, Jimmy. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing well. Thank you again for having me. It's an honour to have a hat trick here on The Warm Down.
James P. Conrad, everybody. In a United shirt. One of the coolest United shirts that we had as well. And don't show them the back, though. Everyone's going to get real mad.
Ooh. Listen, I got this shirt. I'm a big Tevez fan. I support Boca Juniors, and he's a legend there, of course. I know he's a little crazy, and he's done some things that might not make United fans very happy, but when he's on, he is a top, top player.
Yeah, he was a good player. And that shirt as well, I'm sure we wore it like once, twice, something like that. We didn't wear it a lot in that season, but it's a banger of a shirt. How are you doing, Jimmy? How are you coping with the lockdown and all that lot?
Well, I'm getting very familiar with these four walls, Stephen. So just trying to buckle down and prepare for what I think is going to be a pretty long haul. But trying to keep spirits up, you know, trying to keep my kids entertained and engaged. And we live in San Francisco now, so we have a little bit more space than we did when we lived in New York City, which is getting hit pretty hard. So I'm pretty nervous for a lot of people that I know and care about there. But you know, just trying to be smart, not going out, staying home, washing my hands incessantly, and just trying to keep a smile on my face the best that I can and help support others that need a smile as well.
What is the situation? What's the rules, if you like, in San Francisco at the moment in terms of going out?
Well, California's been on lockdown for about 10 days. So essentially restaurants and pubs and all that are closed for the general public. You can get takeout. But which we're trying to do to support local restaurants. Mm. But yeah, there's no more sitting down. There's no more congregating. It's 10 people or less. But I still think that's probably a little bit too much.
How's it? Three. Yeah,
it's got to get down a little bit more. I mean, I've been to the grocery store. I've only been out once in 14 days. It was to the grocery store, and a lot of people are wearing masks, and they're not letting people in. There's a line outside, a queue, as you guys say. 6 feet, they have little markers, and then they let people in two or three at a time so that there's a lot of space to walk around. Thankfully, all the healthcare workers and grocery store people on the front lines that are doing it every day, I mean, I have so much respect for them to kind of keep everything going, because it could be pretty crazy otherwise. I think I've learned throughout this process, and you've seen it in the movies, but it's a really thin line between chaos and order. And we're straddling that line right now. So I'm really thankful for the people that are out there doing the hard work and making sure that society is still kind of moving in a somewhat normal way, given the circumstances.
Yeah.
How about you? How are you guys doing?
I think we're doing okay. By the sounds of it, the lockdown in California sounds really, really similar to what we're experiencing over here. They're saying all non-essential travel, just don't do it. Only go to the shops for essential groceries and stuff like that. So there's no clothes shopping. That's finished. All retail stores are closed. So you've got supermarkets, and they're trying to encourage you to go to your local one. I feel dirty when I go to the supermarket. I don't feel right. Like you, I pretty much only went out twice last week. Once was to post a load of merch on Monday, and once was yesterday to go and get some groceries. And I almost freaked out in the supermarket, because it's like, it doesn't feel right. I feel dirty for being in there, and I just couldn't wait to get home, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, it's when I went and picked up food the other night, I had a mask on. I should have brought gloves. Like, I'm just trying to be sensitive to everybody that's around me. I kind of walk around with the assumption that I have it or have had it. I was in Madrid for El Clasico, as we've now learned, you know, that was about a week and a half before everything started to blow up there. So you'd like to think that I was exposed to it in some capacity. But, you know, I never really had any meaningful symptoms. You know, it's kind of that time of year where you kind of feel fluish. So sometimes I'll feel a little bit, but it's like, am I creating that in my head, or is it real? Or am I trying to feel sympathy for the people that do have it? I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. And when you're kind of stuck in the house, you just start to think about it more and more and more. Because, you know, I love watching Netflix. I love watching old games and stuff. But, yeah, you get a little stir crazy.
Yeah, and I think you're right. There's no such thing as like an innocent clearing of your throat anymore. Everything is like, uh-oh, I got the Rona. That's me. Yeah, I've definitely got it now. And you know, I think everyone's probably hamming up every single tiny little symptom and overanalyzing it. And I think you're right. A lot of it is overanalyzing. And going back to something that you just said a second ago about that fine line between, you know, order and chaos. There's been loads of stories of people kicking off in supermarket lines and stuff in England, which actually are turning out to not be true, but they're so believable because you can really see that it's about to go off almost. It's like people are just about keeping a lid on it, but like it'll take one spark. Very much like happened a decade ago with the riots that happened all over the place, started in London, in Birmingham and in Manchester. You know, those happened and they sparked off very fast. And I do think the same thing could really happen as this lockdown sort of accelerates, because I think it's going to get even tighter here in the next week or so.
Well, what's crazy in our country is that there's an incredible access to guns. So guns and ammo are all sold out in this country. It's almost impossible to get them. And you start looking at your neighbors like, ah, I wonder which one has one and which one doesn't. And which team am I going to have to be on? And what do I have to share my stuff to be a part of that team? Because he's got more guns than everybody else, you know? And so, man, it's the American way, unfortunately. But it could get pretty crazy pretty fast. But I think California in particular is trying to get ahead of it, as for me as a former center back who prided myself on this, they're trying to anticipate and read the game, you know, and not necessarily, and this isn't me as a player, I always trusted my coach, but the coach in our country, our president is not a good leader. He thinks only about himself before thinking about the whole team, and he would not fit in well on any football team. He would not be in anybody's top 11. He's just not a team player, and I think that's proving to be true when we need him to be a leader the most.
I saw a tweet from him earlier boasting about how well his ratings are doing amid the crisis, and you're just like, what are you on about, mate? Like,
yeah. Honestly. Who cares? I mean, honestly, who cares? just start solving problems, man.
Yeah, of course it's the most watched because the entire country wants to find out what the fuck's going on.
Yeah, insane. Exactly.
All right, let's talk about football, Jimmy.
Let's do it.
Let's get a little bit more positive what's going on in here. So there's a couple of reasons I wanted to speak to you. Obviously, we wanted that American perspective on a few different things. David Beckham's obviously just launched his MLS team. We was hoping to be out there for the launch, but we couldn't find a sponsor. And then obviously, we may have actually ended up stranded in Miami by the looks of things. But the first thing that I wanted to come to you about is obviously you had issues with concussion and that sort of thing when you was playing. The English FA has just enacted a rule that I think it's under 13s and below aren't to be doing any headers in matches or training anymore. And I'm sure you've got an opinion on that.
Yeah, so I did. I retired due to concussions in 2011 after 12 years in MLS with the U.S. Men's National Team. And I had a really bad one playing in the Gold Cup against Panama where I went up for a header and went this way and got it on a corner and the guy jumped up and hit me right in the temple. And I got knocked out cold. I mean, I'm still awake, but I go limp and I land on my face first, which doesn't help. And I broke my thumb at the same time because I just everything went limp. I'm still like, if you watch the highlight, it's hard to watch for me in particular, but if you watch the highlight, I'm awake, but I'm not awake. And so I don't wake up until I'm in the ambulance about 20 minutes later. And all I can see is out of the bottom of my left eye. That's when I come through. I'm like, I don't know where I am or what's going on. And then I quickly figure out where I am and my vision starts to come back. But I stayed in the hospital for the night, got monitored and a severe concussion. You know, they took all the right protocols there. There was no question of that. But there have been plenty of other times where I broke my jaw in a game. Clint Dempsey gave me the old elbow. And I convinced the doctor on the sideline that I was fine. But I had a broken jaw and I couldn't talk. So you have to wonder about a little bit of that. And in fairness to those doctors, it's really hard to tell a player not to go back on the field if you can sense that all their energy and adrenaline and all that is telling the doctor everything that he needs to hear. Like, we're very clever as players. We know, and also on top of that, we're males. We have a hero complex. So there's just a whole bunch of different reasons why you don't want to show weakness. You want to get back out there. You want to be the hero. And so there's a lot to fight through. And I think if we empowered teams to have a rule, and I'll get into the youth side of it in a second, but if you just said you could throw a player on until that player gets properly evaluated, what is it really going to matter? You know, I mean, what So you throw, you know, you throw a sub on for 10 minutes while you actually have a proper, thorough investigation of this player. And then at that point, if he's okay, then he's allowed to come back on. Or you give a team an extra sub if somebody has a head injury. These aren't. I know. And I've had this discussion before that some clubs will take advantage of it, right? Mm-hmm. He'll tell his player, hey, act like you have a head injury, and we can bring somebody else on. Yeah, I don't even care. I'd rather there be head injury protocol and people take advantage of that rule than not have it at all, because whatever. So that's that. That's where I feel on that side of it. On the youth side, I think it's a great thing. We have it over here as well for kids under 10, though it might be age 12 now, where they can't have the ball either. And ultimately, that's better for their development anyway. You want the ball at their feet. You want them making more decisions with that, with their feet than with their head anyway. What's interesting is that, and what I learned as a player, is that when you go up for a header, like when you practice a header in practice, you go up full body, you come in with your arms, everything's perfect technique, right? So you learn how to head a ball with your whole body. But in a real game, that's not what happens. You go up for a header and you start there, but then all of a sudden you get nudged. So somebody pushes you from the side and now you're still trying to head it, but it's only your neck and it's only your head. And you don't have any of that torque and force that's coming from your full body. And that's what they need to avoid, especially for younger players who don't have the strong neck muscles to handle and absorb that shock, or don't have the brain development yet. So yeah, it's a really smart move. I'm highly in favor of what they're doing and why they're putting it in place. And I don't think it's going to be a detriment to the players at all. I think ultimately it's going to make them better because they're keeping the ball on the ground.
I never thought a bit about the neck muscle thing, but I do remember as a kid, like you taught head it with your ass almost. That's what you're supposed to get the sort of full technique. I've seen some of the people that are dissenting against it a little bit is more like you're going to come up, let's say the whole of Eastern Europe doesn't adopt this. You're going to come up against some real hard route one teams that have got like 6'7" centre forwards and are going to absolutely bully you, which I think is a valid concern. But isn't that then just say, right, okay, from 14 to 16, once you're now, I mean, some 14 to 16 year olds are big blokes. I think that's the time then that you really start focusing on that sort of level of technique. If heading was done away entirely in the game, how do you think it would change the game?
Well, you definitely save on head injuries. I mean, that goes without saying. I think it would, you could still play long ball. It would just be a different way of how you approach it. You know, I mean, I think of Luis Suarez in particular. I don't know why he popped in my head, and I probably shouldn't say his name wearing a United jersey, but he's very good at like holding the ball up in a way where he didn't have to use his head. He uses his full body, right? So those types of players that know how to hold up a ball, even with a lot of pressure behind them, will be very valuable in this. So, and the guys that are big,
Fellaini's going to be worth $100 million with that chest of his.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Peter Crouch, I don't know how much value those guys have as much, but Fellaini does. He does a good job of holding it up like that. But yeah, I think there'd be a different skill set that you'd be looking for as a manager as you built your team. It's hard to say. I almost feel like you'd want to try that in a very small league or at a lower division to see how that would play out. But you can't just get away from it after 6 weeks if it doesn't look like the way you want. You got to stick with it for a year, 2 years, 3 years. You have to do real full studies on this. So there'd have to be a big commitment by the league and by the players and teams. But I think it's worth trying because I'm very curious to see what the game would look like too.
Yeah, obviously there's been some amazing headed goals scored, and you know, headers are a massive factor in a centre half, obviously, and their skill set. But I think you could still have a very enjoyable game. I mean, most of us have played five a side where there's a no over head height rule, headers aren't in that, and no one's ever gone, I'm not playing five a side, mate, and I like to head the ball.
That's a great point.
So I think the game could easily adapt.
There might be a blend, though, where it's just not on goal kicks. It's not on goalkeeper punts, right? It's just the only time you can head is on a cross, right? If a ball is being crossed in the box, then you kind of still keep that attacking prowess. The ball's getting whipped in. Speaking from experience, aren't hit. Some of them are hit hard, but they're not hit hard enough where it's like this big floating ball and everybody's trying to attack it, and that's where you can get more collisions. So maybe you start there. Maybe you start with kind of easing heading out of the game, but you allow to see how it does in crossing and leaving that in.
So you think it's the goal kick sort of style of like 80-yard punt that's the problem?
Yeah. It just leads to kind of, they're just 50-50 balls, right? I mean, it's not like you're playing the game. You're just throwing it back into the scrum and seeing what happens. So if you could eliminate that, But then obviously people are going to go like, well, Jimmy said he could cross. I mean, I don't know. We'd have to define the rules of what a cross is, right? But maybe if you're in your attacking half and you whip a ball into the box, that's when you can head it. But you can't hit a ball into the box if you're in the defending, if you're in your defensive half.
Well, maybe do it like the opposite of what basketball. Basketball have the backcourt rule. Maybe there's the forward court rule. So when it's forwarded from the other half, you can't edit. But if it's cross within the same half, that'd be pretty easy to implement, I reckon.
I think so too. I don't think it would take long for people to adapt to that. I'm sure you'd have to call it a few times, but I don't know. I think we just solved. I think we just created world peace for headers.
FIFA, call me. All right. The other thing we was going to massively touch on, and we'll get into this actually after the Beckham thing. So David Beckham's obviously just launched Inter Miami FC. Pretty gutted that we didn't go and check out the launch of all that lot. MLS is, what, 2 weeks in, I believe, when all the games got called to a halt. Yeah. What's the impact being over in America with Beckham getting his own team?
I think it's a big deal. You know, when he speaks, people listen. So, for instance, when he was doing kind of his media tour for Inter Miami to promote his new team, he's on all the top shows. Good Morning America, The Today Show. He's talking to the New York Times. He's on you know what I mean? Like, he is everywhere. You can't get away from him. That's how big of a celebrity he is. That's what kind of presence and aura he brings. And MLS can't pay for that type of marketing. Mm. So his presence is massive to the league. I'm excited that he's involved, because when he was here as a player, he made a lot of things happen behind the scenes that benefited the players and benefited the way the players should be treated. His attention to detail with the little things, it just continues to raise the bar for how the game should be conducted over here. And I can't say enough about his influence. I know he's pretty humble. I'm sure you've met him a few times. He's very humble and down to earth. No, you haven't met him. Well, maybe at one point you will.
Only when I was 14.
Maybe he was a little bit different then, because he was at the peak of his, you know, his playing thing. But he's so humble and down to earth and really sweet. And you know, things matter to him. He cares, you know. And he cared about the little players that were going through some struggles. And I can't say enough about the guy. And so I'm excited he's involved. It's unfortunate the league had to stop, because they had some momentum. I thought this was going to be this is the 25th year of MLS's existence. So really just pushing on. We're adding more teams, new markets. So there's a lot of good things that are happening. But I think ultimately the season's going to be shut down for the year. I don't think sports coming back anytime soon. And I think sports and music concerts in particular are going to be the last things that governments allow to happen again. Now, we might have some stuff behind closed doors, but with the fans, I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
No, I actually saw, I guess it's one of Beckham's other teams, or his other team, I should say, Salford City, banged an advert out earlier. They're recruiting an 11 of esports players, which I think is probably a smart move to dip it their toe into the esports world, because I've been playing Football Manager. People have been showing up. If you want to watch that, we're on Twitch. I'll throw the link in the description. People have been showing up watching that and saying, I don't care that it's not even real. I'm watching 22 blokes. I'm happy. So it looks like there's a few people are starting to dip their toe into that. But I've heard everything that you've said about Beckham. I've heard in buckets. We was hoping, obviously, to speak to David when we was in Miami. That's something we've been working on nearly a year. So a bit gutting that we didn't manage to get out there and get that done. Did you watch the Legends game that he played in at Old Trafford last year?
Yeah.
Are you telling me that he wouldn't probably get a game for a Premier League club at the moment? He looked sensational, didn't he?
Yeah, so he did a lot of training with my weight coach. When he played for the Galaxy, the weight coach at the time was the guy that I grew up with, who basically I led.
What's his name?
Jim Liston. I owe a great deal of success to Jim. And so David would go and train at this place. And there's just, I know how hard he works behind the scenes. As I got to know him as a player and heard stories and then saw it up close, the guy puts it in, man. He is all about an honest effort. So as I learned more from Jim, that what David's workout was, I still work out a lot too. I'd like to think I could fit in, not to Premier League, but at least play at a certain level. But yeah, I mean, there's, once you kind of get that seed planted in you, that you just want to put in a good, you know, honest effort into any kind of exercise, it stays with you your whole life. So it doesn't surprise me that he's super fit and ready to go.
Yeah, I'd heard a lot of stories about how much training he'd done in the build-up to it. Like, he was hiring out Loftus Road and getting, you know, some of his son's mates to just turn up, 20 of them, and then play him in, and he'd play a full game. And I can imagine he absolutely ran it. Like, just playing against his kids' mates, that's not even going to be fair, is it? I mean, it looked like he was playing against geriatrics when he played against that Bayern Munich Legends team. So I can't imagine what sort of carnage he caused. What was his lasting impact, do you think, then, on the MLS? Because watching from England, the MLS got ridiculed a little bit in the early days. But I think lately, and I think it's earned this right as well, it seems like there's a real fan culture that seems different in every place. And that was something I really wanted to touch on when we went over, obviously before the trip got cancelled. It seems like there's a real unique fan culture setting up around some of these clubs in the MLS.
Yeah, for sure. The supporters' cultures have changed a lot. I would say that the lasting impact for David Beckham was the rule they created to get him into the league. So they created this designated player rule, which allowed owners to buy any player they wanted and pay him whatever they wanted, and they wouldn't hit the salary cap.
Yeah.
And that really changed the complexion of the league because it allowed the owners to compete a little bit, right? Because our salary cap and the way our league is built is all the players are owned by actually MLS. Yeah. And so everything's tightly controlled. But this allowed the owners for once to finally go out and just kind of handpick who they wanted without having to ask anybody, not asking for permission at all. And that really spawned a new era for us as a league overall, and it really helped grow the game in this country in a meaningful way. So I can't thank him enough for all the impact that he's had both on and off the field. But with regard to supporters culture, man, I think you'd be blown away by what you're seeing over here. I will say that it seems, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of the rest of the world takes their cues from like pop culture, you know, music, movies, books to a certain degree from America, right? Like there's like a nice creative hub here, obviously. But for us as a soccer nation, we take our cues from everywhere else from around the world. So we might steal a chant from Argentina. We might, you know, see some tifo that we like from Italy. We might like, you know, the when you guys march to the match or whatever it is in England or whatever kind of traditions, and we can just kind of handpick all this stuff. And I think some of our supporters have done a great job. Now, sure, it mirrors a lot of the stuff that you see elsewhere, but it doesn't mean less. You know, it means something to these people. And I think what's really changed, and I'll use Atlanta as an example. Nobody thought Atlanta was going to do good in terms of, you know, properly building a community and properly building fans. And they get 70,000 a game. And the fans there have decided they don't want to go watch NFL Atlanta Falcons anymore. They don't want to go watch the Hawks in basketball. They don't want to watch hockey or any of that stuff, because the sense of baseball, the sense of community that you get when you go to a game is so much different than all the other sports. It becomes addicting, right? It becomes your family. It's something bigger. You know, when you go to a baseball game, an NFL game, or, you know, NFL is more like the tailgate outside. There's still a sense of community, but the game's so boring for me in particular. Baseball is more about like you and like your friend, or you and your dad are going. Hockey and basketball are very similar, but the beautiful game does something different. And it's not as long as those games, right? There's a set time, and I don't, man, there's just something about it. You know it. You know what exactly what I'm talking about, and so do your viewers. But it's really impacted the sport, or the people here, in a really positive way, and it's only going to continue to grow. And that's what really warms my heart.
Yeah, from what I've seen, much of what you're saying, really. I'm seeing TIFOs, I'm seeing safe standing, I'm seeing, you know, people really finding their own identities and their own fan groups and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's cool. I think United as a club and the Premier League as a whole suffers because out of the darkness of the hooligan age, the all-seater stadiums, the family-friendly atmosphere, I think it went too far one way. Obviously, hooliganism was not good, but hooliganism meant real, authentically intimidating atmospheres. Mm-hmm. Then you had the all-seater stadiums and a family-friendly atmosphere, which was needed, and it was a way that people could boost revenue, because even though people like to think of the 80s of this brilliant golden age of football, and oh, there's some heroes and some legends have come out of it, attendances tell you that the public was turning away from it in droves. United's attendance was down, Liverpool attendance was down, Arsenal attendance was down. Attendances was just down across the board. because facilities sucked. There was a chance that you're going to get a crack in the stadium. And the Premier League changed that. And that's one of the things that the Premier League is credited with doing in both good and bad things, because those atmospheres went away, because those atmospheres were authentic. There's been a drive lately for a lot of places to manufacture that with safe standing sections or singing sections or atmospheric sections. Like Celtic have got the Green Brigade, United have got the Red Army. Like there's places that are starting to be able to congregate all the fans that want to achieve that. But from looking on the outside, MLS didn't need to do that. It sort of seemed to just spring up in the formation of these teams and the formation of these fan cultures. And the videos that I see, I almost look at them and go, perhaps because they've not had the history of fan-on-fan violence that's been had in the UK, it seems like the fans are almost freer from the off. And I see like LAFC looks like an absolute riot. It looks like a right laugh. Atlanta, as you've mentioned, that looks amazing. Seattle looks good. Tons of these clubs I'm looking at and I'm going, oh my God, I need to go and experience that and see what it's like and get in the middle of all that lot.
Yeah, so I went to LAFC for the first time last year when they played the Galaxy. It's called El Trafico, which is a great, great, great nickname, by the way. It was a playoff game, so it was 5-3. It was a barn burner, ton of goals. Ended up being Zlatan's last game for the Galaxy. He scored a good goal as well, as he does. But yeah, the atmosphere is unbelievable there. I'm from LA, so to be able to see this pop up, no disrespect to the Galaxy, because you know they've done a great job. They're the most successful club in MLS history. But they can't touch the atmosphere that LAFC has created. And to speak to your example, we did the opposite. So MLS started with family friendly first. And then there was this thirst to, okay, listen, it's time for soccer moms to go sit at home. You know, the kids that were kids at that time now wanted to be part of something a little bit more meaningful, wanted to be more enthusiastic, wanted to show their passion in a different way. They wanted to sing, they wanted to dance. They wanted to do TIFO. They wanted to, you know, wave flags and do flares and all that stuff. And really, as you say, make an intimidating experience for the opposing teams. So that, I think in that way has really helped us to kind of not go down that fan-on-fan violence. I think it's going to happen at some point as the teams start to develop more histories. You know, we've already seen it with NYCFC and New York Red Bulls. There's already been some incidences, and I think that's only going to escalate for better or for worse, but most likely for worse. But I, you know, I like that there's some juice between the teams too. I like that there's something that simmers underneath.
Yeah. You know, without rivalry in football.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing? Realistically, like, what are we doing? Why are 70,000 people watching 20 blokes they don't know kick a leather ball around if it isn't for the histories and the rivalries? That's the reason that we're all there.
Yeah, it's a tribalism, right? I mean, you want to be part of something bigger than yourself. And this sport lends itself better than any other sport that I'm aware of. And so I can see why people glom on and you're around people that are like-minded and kind of see life in the same way. And that's just a fun experience to be around. It was my favorite part once I retired and got into the media that I got to go be a fan. You know, I had been only had that singular focus of being a player for so long. I could never really let myself relax and just go have a beer and enjoy the game. So that's been a really incredible experience for me. And I appreciate all the different environments I've been in. I've been all around the world and seen it. I've been to La Bombonera to see a Boca Juniors River Plate game. It's unbelievable. But the spirit is all the same. You know, they want to support their team and they want to be as loud as possible about it. And make sure the other team feels uncomfortable. That's a staple of no matter where I travel, it's always the same.
There's two games in the world which, to me, looking on the outside, look like they are the most fun games to go to. Boca River Plate is one of them.
Yes.
Red Star Partizan is the other, which just
I haven't seen that one yet.
Looks
yeah.
off the chain. Like the stadium's like a five. Sorry, the changing room is like a 5-minute walk to the pitch away through tunnels. Because they're that dodgy, and there's like 100 riot police inside the tunnels from the changing rooms to the. Oh, I mean, if you want to talk about an intimidating atmosphere, that's surely about as intimidating atmosphere as it could possibly be. With this shutdown that we're seeing at the moment, I've spoken to a couple of players at United, how they're coping. They're just doing weights and treadmill and like kick ups and like playing FIFA, essentially. When you had an extended period of a shutdown, because I believe the close season in the MLS, certainly when you was playing in it, was a little bit longer than what we might see in England. What do you do in that sort of length of a shutdown? And what do you think players are doing on the whole at the moment to be ready when the whistle does go again?
Yeah, it sounds pretty similar to what I was doing then. You'd work out, you'd put your, you know, hour, 2 hours in the morning. You'd probably touch the ball in the afternoon. You know, you'd eat, make sure you're eating properly, staying on the nutrition. And then, yeah, you're playing a lot of video games and you're just hanging out ready for the next day. I mean, it's a really good opportunity for certain guys, you know, to get healthy again. Joseph Martinez in Atlanta, who's been the league MVP 2 years ago, he tore his ACL. So this could really benefit him in particular. There's other things that guys can work on. You know, for me in particular, I was doing a lot of training with a tennis ball. So I just went and worked on my game on the tennis ball, trying to develop my first touch and my left foot in particular. I'd watch a lot of film, you know. So at that point, I was watching a lot of Champions League, old archive stuff, just watching decisions like Maldini and Nesta would make, or, you know, some of the greats, you know, Desailly I really loved, and Laurent Blanc, who I tried. Jamie Carragher was another one I'd watch a lot. I tried to find guys that were a little bit more similar to how I played as opposed to guys that I knew I wasn't as good as them. So I tried to find guys that kind of played with their heart on their sleeve and weren't very fast and how they were making decisions to help, you know, make a big difference in the game and have influence. So
Laurent Blanc would have been an excellent example. There's always
little things they can do to fine tune. Go ahead.
Laurent Blanc would have been an excellent example of that, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, he's so smooth of him as a player, you know, but still had a lot of success. There's a really famous Mexican international, Claudio Suarez, who has more caps for Mexico than any other player. Dude couldn't turn. I mean, he might be slower than Per Mertesacker, you know, but the guy has like 160 caps because he just, the way he read the game, his positioning was unbelievable. And he played till he was 40. I mean, and he still was like legitimately good at 40. And he's an absolute hero. I don't think as an American international, I should say that out loud, but he was somebody I looked up to as well. And anytime I could see games of how he played and how he moved, was a big thrill for me. So there's plenty of ways you can get better as a player. And I'm sure a lot of these guys are focusing on that as well as their nutrition, but yeah, it's going to be hard to stay sharp because there's nothing because of the uncertainty. I mean, you say that I had a long break and I did, it was a couple months, but I knew it was coming back at some point. Right now, I think the uncertainty is what's making everybody feel a little unsure of how hard they should be training, or should they just be resting a little bit and then ramping it up later? I mean, there's a lot of too many question marks right now.
Yeah, I think the uncertainty of all of this is what's doing everybody's head in. It's a case of, like, if we all said, right, okay, 1st of June, it's all back. You go, right, okay, I'm going to count the days down and I'm going to focus and I'm going to get there. But when people just go, I don't know.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do with that, man? And I think you're right. And do you know what? I think the rest for some players is going to be sensational. And we've got Pogba, we've got Rashford. Those two could be fit by the time that football comes back. And bloody hell, I hope they are fit by the time football comes back. That could have a massive difference for us. We've got all the uncertainty about are we going to actually restart the league? Are we going to end it and start a new one? All those things remain to be sorted out. I don't want to get into all those because, again, that's a never-ending question and we could solve it and it doesn't matter because no one listens to us. There was another question I was going to ask you. What was it? Oh, that was it.
Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say I think Liverpool deserved to win the league. I know that's not easy. I'm wearing a United jersey. I'm on your show.
Sorry, you're breaking up. I can't. You might have gone for a tunnel or something.
I mean, it's like the world did a Steven Gerrard slip so that Liverpool could not win this pandemic. It's like
if you believe in a God, right, you have to believe that from the start of 2020, he didn't want Liverpool to win this league. Facts, I mean, right? He set fire to the whole of Australia. There's been volcanoes. There's plagues, literal plagues of locusts. That's in the Bible. I know that is plagues of locusts all over Africa and then a nationwide pandemic. If you believe in any God, and whichever flavour of God you believe in, you have to believe he ain't a Liverpool fan, for starters.
I have to agree with that, yes.
What I was going to ask you is, as a centre-half, I'm sure you've seen plenty of Manchester United this season. We signed Harry Maguire in the summer for a big fat fee. Maybe a little bit of teething problems. Don't think he was ever bad, but it was pretty ordinary. But in the last few months, he's really stepped up the mark. In your opinion, who do you think is the best out of the contingent of centre-backs that we've got to partner him?
So that's a good question. What I'll say about Harry Maguire is that was a desperate buy for the club. They needed him. They probably overpaid for him. He probably knows they overpaid for him. Everybody knows they overpaid for him. And now he's got that tag, that pressure of, you know, wasn't he more expensive than Virgil van Dijk? And now, you know, or comparable. And so now people expect him to, there's that, you know, that weird comparison. And they're different types of center backs. What I'll say is that once Harry Maguire got the captain's armband, he did change. Like his approach to the game changed. He took on more responsibility, which is what you want out of your center backs anyway. And I think that really elevated his performance. And so I thought that was a really shrewd move by Ole Gunnar to give him the armband. I think he saw that Harry is a player that needs that type of encouragement. Like, you're our guy. We trust you. You're going to lead us. And he's risen to the occasion. So I like that move, and I appreciate what Harry Maguire brings to the table. What I'll say is that I think Lindelof is probably the guy. He's been a lot more steady than he's ever been. I think he continues to quietly impress. He's not going to be perfect every single game, but there's something about his style that I think meshes well with Maguire. I know Baye's back into the team. I went to do something with United. I think I saw you there. Like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And all the players came out, and I was working with Chevrolet, and they did like something for all the kids that I was there helping out with. And it was like a kicking competition to try to hit like a target, and Baye couldn't hit it to save his life. And all the players were making fun of him and all that type of stuff. And it was really funny. And then I see Baye gets his first game back. He's doing step overs in the box. And I'm like, I love this guy. I mean, this confidence is off the charts.
Oh, there's so much character about him.
Yeah, there is. And there's something I like about his game. And I think sometimes having some personality in your team doesn't hurt as well. But I just feel like when he makes mistakes, they're pretty glaring. And he's a liability in that way. I don't think he's a very good passer of the ball either. So that, I think, works against him. But if you can somehow bypass him in terms of your buildup, then I think he's an option. Or if there's a certain type of player that he's going to go up against, you know, then maybe he's a better fit than Lindelof, who I appreciate, but Baye's a little bit stronger and I think a little bit more difficult to get around. But Lindelof's a better passer of the ball, and so it really just depends on the rapport. You know, who does Harry Maguire trust? Who does he feel most comfortable with? And sometimes it's not always the best player. Sometimes it's a guy that he just knows the movement, so his anticipation is better. Or maybe the other player's a better organizer. And so these are really like subtleties and nuances that would have to bear out over a period of time. I know Baye just got back into the team. So I would say Lindelof at the moment. Who are you feeling?
I think it probably just is about Lindelof right now. I think Maguire covers up for a lot of the deficiencies that Lindelof has, certainly heading the ball, as we've already discussed.
I
think he's really underrated defending the channel. I think he's reading the games actually really good in those areas. I think sometimes he gets caught up a little bit high out the pitch. I think sometimes he rushes into a tackle a little bit. But I think, like you said, some of the worst performances, in fact, the worst performance we've had this season was the League Cup match at home to City when we were 3-0 down at half-time. And this isn't just Phil Jones, it was the entire system around how they pressed Lindelof because he was better with the ball. They then pressed Phil Jones and he had to go back to De Gea and then City would win the ball back. And they did that to us so many times in the first half, they absolutely killed us. And I imagine if we have someone like Baye playing out from the back, because there was times under Jose where Baye would just sort of like punt it and it looked so careless what he was doing. And you're like, is this orders? Has he been told to just oof it to no one? Because it looked so deliberate. Like, you can't, like, no one's that bad on purpose, surely. But that's kind of what it looked like from us. I think you're right on. In playing out from the back, not perfect. I'd love to see what Axel Tuanzebe could do, given an extended run of the team. Maybe he needs another run out. But you know, the talk of bringing in somebody like Koulibaly, I think it's dreaming, but I definitely would be dreaming if we've got like Koulibaly.
I would be so excited. I'm not like a diehard Manchester United fan, obviously a ton of respect for the club, but I would be thrilled for you guys if you got somebody like Koulibaly into the team. I mean, yes, he would definitely raise the level for sure. One of my favorite things about Sir Alex Ferguson and the way he styled his teams, and this speaks to Baye a little bit, was that and this wasn't really talked about, maybe, well, at least not in my circles, and obviously I'm not as entrenched. I don't live in Manchester, so I can't speak to what you guys are talking about on a regular basis. But what I loved is that if Phil Neville, when he was playing right back, couldn't get it to Beckham, whoever, out wide right away, and that left back had stepped up to Beckham, let's just use these two guys as an example, then Neville immediately knew to drop it into that little pocket in behind the left back, but not out of bounds, not to the sideline, not so just to give the striker, whoever it was, Ruud van Nistelrooy or Dwight York or whoever it is, that chance to make it like a 50-50 ball. Because if he gets that ball, then you guys are in a great spot to hold it up and play from there, and then Beckham can pick it up off of whoever it is. Or the defender has it, and now he's got his back to goal. And now is he going to play back to his goalkeeper? Is he going to, what is he going to do? He's running towards the end line or the sideline. He's screwed. And it's such a smart, shrewd ball. And it looks purposeful because the timing of the run looks like that's exactly what they planned. And I just thought that they worked through it. And now when I coach, I teach the same exact thing. Like there's certain cues in the game. And if this cue isn't on or plan A, plan B aren't on, then plan C is a nice one if the timing is great. And then everybody knows, okay, this is how we need to react if this is where the ball goes. And Manchester United were so good at it that it looks like magic. I mean, their timing was so good. And they got strikers that knew how to kind of run off the back shoulder of players and hold the ball up. And then they play from there. And then Scholes and Giggs and Beckham could do their thing. And they were off to the races. And even if they didn't win that ball, they'd win the second ball on their pressure because their pressure was so good. And then they'd start playing it from there. And then they're obviously 30 yards up higher, 40 yards up higher up the field. Honestly, it's not route one. For me, it's art. And I don't think it gets enough credit, that ball. And so when we bring it back to Bailly, I can see why Mourinho, first and foremost, wants him just to launch it because he just don't trust. Because he tries, he thinks he's better than he is with the ball, right? We've seen him do crazy step overs. He's like, dude, relax. Just clear that sucker. And I can understand why Mourinho didn't trust him. But if there was a way that he could just work on, like if we talk about this free time, all Bailly needs to work on is receiving a ball from Maguire, so from his left to his right, taking a touch and just learning how to drop a little teardrop over the left back into that little pocket. That's all I would have Bailly do in this offseason. Just work on that teardrop, baby. but that's what he lacks in his game. If he could just get that in his game, it would open up Manchester United in a much different way and probably give him more playing time.
I love that little Phil Neville, David Beckham little anecdote there. Give me another one. There must be another one from your playing days that someone told you and you was like, do you know what? I'm keeping that one. That's mine. Because I'm going to be coaching straight for Paddock FC very soon. We're going to be hopefully entering the very first stages of the FA Cup. We're going to come up against some experienced sides. What do I need to be putting into the lads, Jimmy?
Yeah, I mean, that's and congratulations on that. I hope that goes well. It sounds like a cool experiment. I wish we had as many divisions here as you guys have over there. You know, I think that's one in particular. I think it's really important. And I don't think this gets talked about enough. You need to work on team shape. Like everybody needs to know how to move, because if you start defending in ones and twos, what ends up happening, which is fine at the start of the game, everybody's got all the energy and excitement, but then if you have one or two guys going to press and the rest of the team isn't ready, yo, those two guys are going to be pissed and they're going to stop moving completely. So you have to figure out ways where you got to be very clear as a coach as to where you want your team to win the ball and how. And honestly, this is what I did with my U8s all the way up to the fourth division team that I helped coach here. We start with we walk. So I put four different cones, right? So there's one cone, then there's a set of two cones, set of three, set of four, and I put them all over the field. And I basically hold their hand and take them where I want them to be based on where, if I go to the first cone, this is the ball. This is how I want you to approach it. This is how I want you to force the play. This is where I expect us to win it. And then we go to the second cone, and we just walk, and I make sure, and I make everybody take a look around. I want them to get a picture of what it looks like, because when they win the ball, they need to know exactly where everybody is. So yes, this feels like a defensive thing. It feels like it's unnecessary. It's one of the most important things that you can do. And then you go to the third cone, set of cones, you go to the fourth set of cones. And then you make them jog, right? So now you're just like a light jog. Everybody's moving, keeping their distances the same, right? And then you make them like full game speed. So it's just like a warm-up, but you get everybody on the same page. And then in the game, all of a sudden, when they win a ball, they know exactly where everybody is. The timing of everything is so important. So I would say team shape and then doing some passing patterns, which is the example I used before. Figuring out different cues, like if this isn't on, what's next? And making sure that everybody has a plan. And then what I tell them is, I'm giving you these are the parameters. These are my this is what I expect us and how to move. So team shape for sure. It's not going to be 100%. Sometimes we are going to get broken, and that's when we need our back four, back six to really hold it down. And that's a different layer of defending and teaching that I work on. But this is how we're going to move. When you guys get into the attacking third, that's when I want you to be yourself. You love the game for a reason. If you're in a 1v1 situation, take them on. I don't care if you lose the ball 90% of the time. That 10% of the time could turn into an assist or a goal. So have the confidence. But we're working very hard as a group to get us in good positions to get into the attacking third and play with confidence and purpose. And so there's a lot to unpack there, but I would say having good team shape and having some passing patterns, giving your team ideas of how to move, and then allowing them to be themselves within and having confidence that this is where everybody should be. I will say too, this helps you as a coach for accountability, because since you've told them already, you've given them a frame of reference of how you want to move and how you want to play and how you want to support the player with the ball. They can't say, well, I thought that you were like, no, dude, this is exactly what I asked you to do. And if you're not doing it, I'm going to find somebody that does. So it's really important from a teaching component as well that you give them black and white and it's not gray. Because if it's gray, then you're going to get a team that doesn't really know what to do and how to move. So anyway, I could go on and on about it, but that's what I got for you.
Oh, I think we might have to get you in for a quick hour next time you're in Manchester, I reckon, and see if you can have a run out with the lads, I reckon.
I just got to get on Football Manager. Hopefully that'll help out for me. I don't know.
Do you know what? It feels like it's going to be ages since we do see you over for a game. It feels like it probably won't be this year, even if everything goes to plan, I don't think. Which is sad, I think, because it's only bloody March.
Yeah, I know.
So, unfortunately, I think we'll end it on that. But that was some excellent advice. Cheers, Jimmy. I'm definitely going to implement those. Stretford Paddock lads, if you're watching, get ready for some of that. What I will say is some of the stuff that I've been finding recently is some of the apps that are available and some of the interactivity stuff, some of the iPad things that you can get for coaching and for implementing your vision are amazing tools. And I can't wait to properly get to grips with all of those. But Jimmy, cheers for joining us, mate. Anything you need to plug?
No, just follow me at Jimmy Conrad, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, if TikTok's your thing, on YouTube as well. I'm on Twitch as well. Everything's at Jimmy Conrad. It's pretty easy to find me, and I'll be doing my best to keep things lighthearted during a dark time. So I appreciate your time, Stephen.
What are you playing on Twitch, mate?
Right now, I do FIFA, of course, but I might transition to Football Manager. So it's kind of slowing down for FIFA. We're all waiting for FIFA 21 at this point.
Yeah, I've added a patch which enables all the way down to the Manchester League, which means 11 promotions, and we will be in the Premier League. It's going to take me. It took me a week so far to get out of the Manchester League. So we're here for a long haul, I think. But we are prepared. We are prepared.
I'm going to tune in and watch then, see how you do.
All right, Jimmy. Thanks, everyone. Go and check out what Jimmy's up to, and we will see you guys in the next one.